Okay. It is 12 o'clock, so I think we'll go ahead and get started. I just want to start by introducing myself. I'm Brooke Fredrickson. I'm the Executive Secretary of the North Dakota Board of Dietetic Practice. I've been in this position about 5 years. And prior to that, I did serve on the board for 6 years. We do have Meredith Wagner, the board chair, on this call as well. She's going to be helping me with monitoring questions and doing some of the Q&A at the end of the webinar. So I want this to be really informal and interactive. So I have a brief slideshow that we'll go through. It shouldn't take more than 20, 25 minutes, and then we'll open it up at the end for some Q&A. If you do have any questions or comments during the presentation, please feel free to put those into the chat. Meredith will be watching those, and then we can answer them at the end. We'll have give you the opportunity to take your mute off at that point too to ask questions if you would like to. But please keep things muted. If you'd keep please keep your microphone muted during the presentation. That would be helpful. Like I said in the email, the reason we're doing this, we've just had a lot of increased disciplinary action done specifically around our continuing education audits. So I wanted to make sure to give you an opportunity of what to expect if you are chosen for an audit. And then we're just going to give kind of a brief overview of the licensing and some of the common questions that we get as well. So with that, I will go ahead and get started. So just to go over some of the licensing requirements for our dietitians, and this is pretty straightforward. You have to complete an Ascend accredited program. You must complete the required supervised practice or internship requirements, and then you must have an RDN credential in order to be licensed in North Dakota. You also have to have good standing with the Commission on Dietetic Registration. Background check if requested by the board. Now, we have this language in our law, but we are currently not doing any background checks. That has not been something that we've required. However, going forward with the licensing compact, once that is in place, any North Dakota resident dietitians who want to become part of the compact will have to go through a background check in order to apply to be part of the compact. That is one of the requirements, but it will only be those for living in North Dakota. Everyone that's out of state will have to be background checked in their own home state in order to be part of the compact as well. Our licensing requirements for nutrition or nutritionists, it requires a master or doctoral degree in nutrition. They also have to complete a board-approved internship or supervised practice experience. And then they have to meet one of the following criteria. So they either have to pass a national exam. The current exams that we accept as a board are for the CNS or the DACBN credentials, or they have to have valid certification as a CNS or a DACBN. Again, background check if requested by the board, which we are currently not doing. One thing to note on the licensing of nutritionists, we do not license on credential alone. So just because someone has the CNS or the DACBN credential in another state does not guarantee that they will be licensed by us. Every state has different licensing requirements when it comes to this licensed nutritionist pathway. Some of them will license by credential alone. Some require education and supervised practice requirements. We are one of those that requires those just because the way that the program has been set up in the past, that they didn't previously have program accreditation. There was a lot of discrepancy in the hours and the requirements in order to obtain a CNS. And so because of that, we require the education and the supervised practice documentation specifically. With reciprocity, we do accept reciprocity for licensing in the state of North Dakota. So if someone applies with us and indicates that they are licensed in another state, I will reach out to that other board, verify that they're licensed in that state, and it's a really fast process for licensing. All the states with licensure laws in the United States right now do meet the reciprocity requirement for us because they do all require the RD credential. For nutritionists, however, the only state that meets our requirements for reciprocity is North Carolina. There are three states that have passed laws for the licensed nutritionists, or they've updated their statutes on that. That would be Nebraska, Montana, and New Jersey. They are not yet enacted. I don't think they've gone through the administrative rule process, but they soon will also be equivalent to our law, and therefore we can accept reciprocity from those states. We do have something called limited practice without a license, and I do get lots of questions about this. Some people view it as like a telehealth license. It is not necessarily a telehealth license. We charge a $25 fee, and what it does is it allows you to practice in the state of North Dakota for less than 30 days per year. So the reason it's not a license is we don't assign a license number. So if you're doing telehealth for a company or you're billing insurance, this really isn't going to be beneficial for you. You're going to have an actual license in order to do that. But if you're working for a company that's maybe doing some consulting work in North Dakota, or if there's some kind of temp work that your company wants you to do in the state of North Dakota that isn't necessarily billing insurance, it doesn't maybe require a license, but is considered practicing medical nutrition therapy, this would be the case in which you would use this. It's really rare that we give these out. We maybe have five out of our current licensees. We have about 800 in the state, but only about five have this limited practice. So if anyone has any questions about it, you can certainly ask, but that would be the instances in which you would use this. So licensee responsibilities, we do have it written into our statute that it's the responsibility of the licensee to immediately notify the board of any change to your contact information. I know come renewal time, I get a lot of emails back that, our email addresses that are no longer exist and people aren't notified that their renewal is due because they haven't updated their contact information. So anytime you have an update to email addresses, maybe this is why we recommend that you don't use a work email, because if you ever leave that facility and you don't have the access to that email anymore, you're not going to get any of the information from us. So use a personal email if you can. But you can go into our website at any time. We do have the login feature in the corner. If you just click on that and put in the email address and password you have with us, you can print your certificate, you can change your name, you can upload marriage certificates, update your address, emails, whatever you need to do. But that is the responsibility of the licensee. So please make sure that that's up to date at all time. We have several exemptions to licensure. Now, since I'm speaking to people who are already licensed, I'm not going to go into details about this, but we do get lots of questions about exemptions. There is a direct link right there where you can go to our law and read through them. And if you have any specific questions about exemptions, I guess feel free to put them in the chat and we can answer them at the end. But I just wanted to note we do have some in there. If you're interested, go ahead and look into them. One thing that we did when we updated our law in 2021 is we actually put in a scope of practice for our licensees. So all of our licensees are able to practice medical nutrition therapy. That's what we're trained to do. We can accept and transmit orders. We can order therapeutic diets. Now, LRDs can only do enteral and parenteral nutrition. LNs cannot. If LNs want to order those kind of orders, they have to be certified by the National Board of Nutrition Support. They have to have a separate certification to do that because they're not trained in that in their undergrad and master's programs. Our licensees may order medical laboratory tests related to therapeutic treatments consistent with state law. We can implement prescription drug dose adjustments for specific treatment protocols. So this is a question that I get a lot of. So I'm just going to give a few scenarios. I'd say the most common one is insulin dose adjustments. So if you are a dietitian or a nutritionist and you are working in an endocrinology clinic or in a diabetes education program, and your providers want you to be able to do insulin dose adjustments with your clients, this would be one of those things that allows you to do that. Now, in order to do that, number one, you have to make sure that you're knowledgeable and competent to do it. So don't go into doing that if you don't feel comfortable and you've not been trained to do that. You need to make sure that you're following clinical practice guidelines, by, if it's diabetes, say the Diabetes Association or the Association of Diabetes Care and Education Specialists or something like that. We want to make sure that the protocol is also approved and delegated by the prescriber and the facility. So we need to make sure that the medical team or the prescriber of that medication has given you permission to do these dose adjustments. Okay. So that's just one example of that. I've had another question recently about GLP-1. So some people who are working in these medical weight loss clinics are saying that their providers want them to do GLP-1 dose adjustments. This would fall under that same thing. Make sure you're competent. Make sure that you've been delegated, that you have protocols in place in order for you to do that. Dietitians and nutritionists cannot start or prescribe medications. We cannot stop medications. So again, always be communicating with the prescribing provider in these instances. The other thing that we can do is prescribe vitamin and mineral supplements and discontinue any unnecessary vitamin and mineral supplements. So that is one prescription duty that we've been given. We have a code of ethics in our statute. Again, pretty basic things, making sure that you're being honest, working in it with integrity, providing factual information, making sure that you're responsible and know your professional limits as far as like your competency and your ability to do your job. Make sure to disclose any conflict of interest. I would say one of the biggest questions that I have regarding this is the selling of supplements. I have lots of people contact me saying, hey, I'm working with a company. I'm selling supplements. Can I do that as a dietitian or as a licensed nutritionist? Absolutely, you can. There's nothing that says that you can't in our code of ethics, but you need to disclose to your client or the people that you are selling these supplements to that you get a cut of the income. So if you're making 20% of the income, that should be disclosed to the client. It's up to them if they want to purchase from you or not, but you at least need to be honest about your intention behind maybe pushing a certain supplement or brand on them. Another thing, we need to notify healthcare providers of any change in health status. So if we notice that a client isn't doing very well or they're struggling with something, it's actually our responsibility to notify their healthcare provider. We can do that with permission of the client. We cannot guarantee outcomes or results. And then, of course, we need to make sure that we're demonstrating professionalism, including on social media. I know this has become an increased issue. Just make sure that what you're posting, you're okay with it being there forever and you're okay with everyone seeing it. So just use discretion. Along with the code of ethics, we have a list of unprofessional or unacceptable professional conduct. So this would be things like taking financial advantage of a client for personal gain, entering into any illegal acts with a client, being involved in dishonesty or fraud in the practice of nutrition, any conviction of a criminal act that affects your practice. I do get questions about criminal acts. So like say we have some licensee who have maybe gotten a DUI or something and they're wondering if that's going to affect their license. Now, driving under the influence of alcohol or drugs, I guess, does not affect their license. So we would not look at that as being a reason to remove a license or to not allow a license. However, if someone, say, was convicted of insurance fraud for fraudulently billing insurance for their services to provide medical nutrition therapy, that is directly related to the practice of nutrition. So that would be something that maybe would prohibit someone to be able to be licensed here. Or maybe if they work, say in WIC with children or something and they have a criminal record of child abuse or something like that, maybe something like that would prohibit their license. But if it's completely unrelated to the practice of what they do, it's not something we're necessarily going to look at or worry about. Other unacceptable professional conduct is violating confidentiality and discrimination laws, not seeking treatment for an illness or disorder that interferes with your ability to do your job. For example, if you have a drinking problem and you're showing up late for work and you're not able to do your job or you're making errors, things like that, that is your responsibility to take care of that issue. So that would be considered unacceptable. Failure to report the incompetent, unethical, or illegal practice of a dietitian or nutritionist. Misrepresenting professional qualifications, certifications, accreditations, affiliations. So again, being just making sure that we're being honest about what we can do and any credentials we do have. We don't want to provide inaccurate, misleading, or false information to the board. This includes on your renewal forms and application forms. Like sometimes people will indicate, and I'm not saying that this is like a bad thing, but maybe this is one example. Someone might apply for a license in North Dakota and they won't apply for reciprocity. Even though they are licensed in multiple states, like we still need to know that you're licensed in those multiple states. So you still need to list what states you're licensed in, so that we can know and that we can verify that your license is in good standing in those other states. So, just making sure that you're answering all the questions on the forms accurately is really helpful. Providing incompetent services to a client which present risk of harm. So again, as a dietitian or nutritionist, we should make sure that we're competent in what we're doing and not causing any harm to our patients. Okay, so our license renewal process, we have an annual license here, so we renew every single year. Our licensing period goes from July 1st until September 30th, so it'll be opening up here in a couple of weeks. On July 1st, you will receive an email from me indicating that the renewal period is now open. Renewals, the fee is $50 if you complete your renewal application by August 1st, so in that first month. From August 1st to September 30th, that fee increases to $75. So the incentive is to get it in early. That's why we do the lower fee. But it's not a bad thing if you wait until August or September. You just have to pay the extra $25. If a license is not renewed by September 30th, it's going to be considered lapsed, and the status in our system is going to change you from active to expired. Once a license is lapsed, you cannot use the title dietitian or nutritionist nor practice until the license is reactivated. So please make sure that you're getting in your renewals on time so that you can prevent that. Once you apply for a renewal, you can still renew for up to a year, technically. So if you go in and fill out your renewal application, say October 10th, we can certainly renew you, but you may have to submit continuing education credits, you know, for a certain period of time in order to be reactivated again. It will also show up in our system that you've had a lapsed license for a period of time so that if employers or anyone else reaches out, we can tell them that your license was lapsed during this time. So again, it's really important to make sure that you're getting your renewals in by that end date. The continuing education requirements for our licensees are both to obtain 75 continuing education credits during a 5-year cycle. For dietitians, your cycle is aligned with your CDR cycle. We just follow that exact same one. Any specific requirements from CDR, such as the ethics credit, also applies. So when we do our audits, we will be looking for those things as well, since it's a requirement for dietitians. For licensed nutritionists, your cycle is based on your initial licensing year. So if you get licensed in 2026, your 5-year cycle will end in 2031. The criteria for acceptable continuing education for LNs is listed in our admin rule. It's a pretty detailed list, so if anyone has any questions, I can certainly send that to you, but it is on our website under our admin rule. Courses must also be related to our increased professional competence. So anything that is not specific to nutrition or pre-approved by one of the credentialing agencies may be rejected by our board. We've had a few of these come up in the past few years, and so I just wanted to bring up some examples. For example, I know a lot of dietitians are getting into yoga or maybe energy healing or doing some other alternative therapies. Just please note that those continuing education opportunities are not going to be approved by our board. We want to make sure if it's specific to food or nutrition or our body using nutrients or something like that, we will absolutely approve it. But if you're just going to a yoga retreat and receiving continuing education on yoga, we will not be accepting that as a board. Other things too, like job required training. So CPR, first aid. I know some jobs may require you to do even like HIV training or very specific training like that that's like required for all employees in the field or in the facility, we will not be accepting those either, because those are for, those are like general education things that may be just for employment. It's not going to be specific to our profession or our practice. So we will not accept those either. The most important thing is that you must maintain proof of attendance of all of your continuing education. So if you don't have the certificate with your name and your date on it, it didn't happen. So please make sure that you're keeping proof of all of those things. If you do not have a specific certificate, I guess we, there's other forms of proof that may be accepted, but dates, you know, maybe receipts, some other things we could maybe look at. But the best thing is to keep those certificates. Okay, so the CEU audit process, for this is for dietitians specifically. In July, once our renewals have gone out, I put in a to our system, it can select 10% of a random selection of RDs who are at the end of their five-year cycle. So that'll submit a list to me. It's usually somewhere between like 12 and 15, although that number might be higher this year, up to 20 dietitians. I will send you out an email requesting paper copies of your CEU certificates. So yes, we do want them printed off and actually mailed to us. That also needs to include the letter of attestation from CDR. So at the end of your five-year cycle, when you submit it to CDR, CDR sends you a letter saying, hey, we've received all your certificates. You attest that you've completed them. You know, your next cycle starts on this date. So we want a copy of that letter. If you don't have that letter is, it is stored in your PDP profile in the CDR website. So you can go and print it off anytime. A lot of people struggle to find it. But if you can't find it, we will also take a copy of your approved CDR activity log. So if you can just go to the CDR activity log that you sent in, that five-year cycle, if it says it has to have your name on it, the date, and then it has to have approved on it, you can also send a copy of that. And that's going to list out all of your continuing education. That has to be sent to us by September 1st. And then we will review it at our September meeting to make sure all of those qualifications are met. And then you'll be notified of the results at the end of the audit. We'll send out an email and let you know what we found. The process for the LNs is just a little bit different. They will actually be prompted to upload all their continuing education certificates into the system when they renew their license. So when they log in to renew in July, they need to make sure that they have all of their CEU certificates saved in a PDF form so that they can upload them into our system. Again, at the September meeting, they will be reviewed to ensure that they're all met and then notified at the end of the audit. So disciplinary actions taken by our board, they can be taken for any violation of the statute or the rules as determined by the board and its legal counsel. Written documentation of terms are mailed to the licensee to be signed and returned to the board. So if someone is found to be in default of something, we will contact you. You'll get a letter from our legal counsel indicating the reasons why you're being disciplined with the terms, and then you have to sign off that you are in agreement with them. The terms of the discipline will remain in effect until all requirements are met. So, for example, say the discipline was that you didn't have enough continuing education credits. We send out a document saying you are 7 credits short. You need to you have 90 days to complete these 7 credits and turn them back into our board. You will remain, your license will remain, on probation until all of those requirements are met. So as soon as you complete those 7 continuing education units, send it to our board, we're able to review them and accept them until that date, you will be, yeah, your license will remain in probation. Once we accept them and everything is cleared, your license will go back to active status. However, the disciplinary action will remain a permanent record, part of your record. All disciplinary actions are reported to the National Practitioner Data Bank. So it's a national data bank that every state agency can log into and see if someone has a violation against their license. So we do report all of those, and they do remain permanent. I've had lots of people ask me if they can be removed from your record once it's once everything's back in place and active. We cannot do that. All disciplinary action is part of your permanent record. And the main reason we're doing this webinar today, again, is because of the increase in the disciplinary actions we've had. Most of them are because people are not providing adequate documentation for their CEUs during an audit. So it is vitally important that you can maintain your CEU certificates, that you have them available. We give you almost 6 weeks to organize them and get them to our board before they're due. And so just please make sure that you are staying organized and on top of that so that you can prevent any undue discipline to your license. Okay, we do have a complaint process on our website. If you go to the website, I think it's just under the home button. There's complaints. There's a form that you can fill out. Any complaint that is received, I receive immediate notification via email. We set up a meeting, usually a special board meeting, to discuss this. We consult with our legal counsel. And then if there is anything that needs to be dealt with, we will reach out to the person who the complaint is involving. The person who submitted the complaint will be notified of the results, so we will be in contact with you about that. But one thing I really want to stress is that our board only has jurisdiction over our licensees. So we get a lot of complaints about people who are not licensed, who are maybe personal trainers, who are some kind of a health coach or something, and people are complaining that they are practicing medical nutrition. Now, we can notify them that they're violating our law, and often we will have our legal counsel send them a letter saying, hey, it appears on your website that you are providing medical nutrition therapy, even though you're not licensed to do so. Please remove this information from your website. We don't have the authority to order a cease and desist, so we cannot just tell them what they can and cannot do per se. We can't charge them with anything. We do notify. We will send a letter to their local district attorney to let them know that they're in violation of the law, and if the district attorney wants to pursue charges, they could. I don't think that's ever happened, but we do notify them. But we really only have jurisdiction over our licensees, so we can discipline our licensees, we can take away licenses, we can do things like that. But if someone is not licensed and they're practicing MNT, the only thing that we can really do is notify them. So I just want that to be clear. Because I think there's some people think that we can stop them from doing what they're doing, and we really don't have the jurisdiction to do that, unfortunately. Just to give, a little information, we've only received 3 formal complaints in the past 5 years. So our complaint form is not used very often. So if there are things out there, I mean, we welcome complaints. We will look into everything that comes in. If you guys do have concerns about someone practicing medical nutrition therapy or a licensee that's in violation of something, please notify us, because that's our job to look into that. So, okay, so we're going to move into the question part of the session now. I wanted to put my contact information on there. That's the email and the direct phone number to reach me. I also wanted to say I do have very limited office hours. I only work 10 to 15 hours per month. And so I'm not available all the time, but if you do email me, I will get back to you. If you leave a voicemail, I will get back to you within the week. So just know that that's there. I did include some additional references in here. So we have direct links to our law and admin rule on our website. I did link to the Commission on Dietetic Registration and their PDP guide as far as like what's acceptable from continuing education requirements. And then I included a link to the complaints. So, Meredith, I'm going to ask you right now, if you will, turn your video and mic on and help me with the Q&A part. I think we'll hit up some of the questions in the chat first. If we can do that, and then I'll maybe have you, if you have questions that you want to ask in person, Do you guys have the ability to raise your hands? Does that give you an option?
Brooke, maybe we just want people to put their questions in the chat so if
Yeah.
everyone's not talking at once.
I say, and I can read them off to you then here, Brooke.
Perfect. I'm fine with that.
And Amanda did a nice job of answering some of the questions via the chat, but just to make sure if you weren't following along with the chat, I'll read the questions, so Brooke, Amanda, and or I can answer them. So our first question that came in was, how long do we need to keep certificates of attendance for CEU activities?
For the purposes of our audits, I would say a year after would be sufficient. So if your cycle ends in May of 2026, keep them at least until 2027. I'm not sure what CDR requirements are. For some reason, I feel like CDR requires you to keep them for 2 years in case they do an audit. So you might want to check with their requirements, but for the purpose of our state, I think a year is plenty.
And because then a follow-up question to that was how long after? So Amanda had responded to keep them for the 5-year CEU cycle for dietitians. But then a question of how long after? So you're suggesting keep them a year in case you're audited by the Board of Dietetic Practice.
Yes.
There was a question about keeping CPE documentation electronically. And Amanda's response was, we currently don't have the means to allow licensees to track their CPE certificates online. But any other response you would have, Brooke?
Is this a question about them uploading their certificates into our system like the LNs do? Okay.
I believe
So
so.
the reason that we don't right now is because so when we do our audit process in September, the board members each take a group of documentation, like maybe each board member will take five dietitians charts or, documentation to review. Our board members do not have access to our electronic system. They don't have access to our licensing software. So they wouldn't be able to do that. If you uploaded everything into our system, I'd have to print everything off anyway and give it to them in paper form. So, that's why we ask for it in paper form. Hopefully someday we'll be able to have you just upload it into their system and then our board members would have access and they could go in there and view it that way. We aren't set up that way. And with the number of dietitians we have right now, it's not feasible. So.
Okay, our next question, sort of along the same line. To clarify, you need paper copies of CEU along with the letter from CDR.
Yes. So the letter is going to be, excuse me. The letter is going to be required when you renew. So when you renew your license at the end of your 5-year cycle, you'll have to upload that attestation letter at the time of renewal. When you send in your audit materials, so your continuing education documents, we'll want the activity log sent along with that. Because the activity log is what we compare it against. So it's going to have everything that you submitted to CDR listed out and the dates that you put in there, and we're going to compare your CEU certificates to that log.
So I think you just answered our next question. There was some confusion about does the printed off list for CDR in the PDP stand in place of each individual certificate? So if a licensee is audited, they have to have both the printed off log from CDR and individual certificates.
Correct, both.
Can you speak more to our ability to order labs? If there's any more information we need to know about this.
There's nothing that prohibits us from ordering labs. Again, they need to be nutritionally relevant. So like you can't be ordering labs for like STDs or something that are completely not nutrition related. But it's going to be very facility specific. So like if you work again, in a clinic or somewhere and the providers there are okay with you ordering maybe an annual vitamin D level or maybe ordering some fasting glucose if you're monitoring someone's blood sugars or, you know, doing a BMP or something like that. I think it's going to be, it's along with the prescribed dose adjustments, I think the medical lab thing's also going to have to be kind of a facility approved thing. There are limitations with insurance coverage when it comes to ordering labs. So like if your provider is ordering, say, an A1C every 3 months and you in the middle of that order an A1C, if their insurance only covers a quarterly A1C, they might get hit with the bill of that because you're ordering it too often. So again, I think there's some nuances in there where you want to make sure that you're communicating with the provider, that your expectations, what you're looking for and what they're looking for are, you know, not in conflict with each other. I want to make sure that the, again, insurance coverage is considered or the cost of it is considered if you're doing it. But as far as like, if you're an independent dietitian and you want to order lab work and someone's paying it out of pocket, there's no limit to that. So. Does that answer the question?
If it doesn't, please feel free to clarify your question. Yes, they said thank you. Can you provide guidance for BS graduates in dietetics and currently pursuing an MS? Can they practice MNT in a facility or do they need to obtain licensure for LN and then be under the supervision of an RD?
Okay. I might need you to repeat that one. So they have a 4-year. Are they already an RD?
It does not appear so. So if I can maybe take a stab at this one, is if they have a bachelor's degree in dietetics, all right, currently the requirement is to have a graduate degree. So if they're pursuing a master's because they do not have the dietitian credential yet, they are considered a student. They do not have to be licensed because they're not credentialed at this point. So once they obtain their graduate degree, sit and pass the RD exam, then they would have to apply for licensure. So while they are a student doing their supervised practice, they are covered under the license of the dietitian that they're working under. Would that be correct, Brooke?
Right. Yeah. And because what was the question? Did it have something to do with it getting an LN?
Yeah. Do they need to obtain licensure for LN and then be under the supervision of an RD?
No. So with the current licensure requirements for an LN, you have to pass a national exam and your supervised practice has to be completed before you can do that. So the LN requirement or the LN credential and the LRD credential are going to be equivalent. So it would be best to just get your RD once you pass your exam and finish your internship. Yep.
Okay. The next was a comment slash question. So my team helps clients order labs as appropriate and as we have the education to do so, but of course we don't diagnose. Is this correct? A doctor who we are contracted with asked me, so I'd like to know the details if there are any more.
The question is if the doctor's given them permission to order labs and they're asking if that's okay.
Oh, right. So someone says this is the same question as you answered earlier with the order.
Okay. All right. That was the continuation of my question. Thanks, okay. Brooke. You answered it.
Okay.
Great presentation. Thank you.
Okay. So then there was a clarification going back to the CEU. In CDR, you can upload PDFs of certificates. Would that be good enough? Or maybe those don't show up on the printout of the PDP. So they do not show up on the printout. So you do need to submit both the PDP log approved by CDR and all the individual certificates in paper form if audited.
Mm-hmm. And Brooke, maybe I just want to expand a little bit here. I think some of the confusion surrounding just because the CDR approves your PDP plan and completion of your 75 credits doesn't necessarily guarantee that the North Dakota Board of Dietetic Practice is going to accept those continuing education credits as well. We're very thorough with our audits, and we have found many instances where the level of credits that licensees are attempting to claim to reach their 75 credits is not adequate to continue advancing your education for a profession. And so that's why we're requiring not only the log from the academy, but then also the certificate of attendance so that we can verify the appropriateness of the learning level and that it was an accredited continuing education opportunity.
Correct. Because just because you've submitted everything to CDR and you have the right number of units, they're going to hit approved. But you were never actually audited by CDR. They didn't look at each of those individual credits to make sure that they met the requirements. CDR does do audits and request all that information, and they might find that, yes, even though you submitted 78 or 80 credits, they're only going to accept, you know, 65 of them because of, right, it didn't meet the criteria that they require. So just because it says approved by CDR doesn't mean that CDR has actually approved it unless you've been through an audit.
And I would just add to that, as someone who's sat through the audits, is sometimes we all make mistakes. And so we might put that it was two CEUs in our CDR log that was approved. And then the actual certificate says one. So, right, we do as a board verify that how many you logged does match the certificate as well. So one question, I think this was maybe more just sort of generally, does anyone know where we can obtain CEU certificates for attending sessions at FENCE? This particular person attended in 2024 and logged each session. They attended in their PDP activity log, but they don't recall certificates being provided. So in my experience, usually it comes a couple weeks after, and it's usually in a, right, give us feedback about the conference, and then it has a link to the continuing education certificates. But I might recommend you contact the academy if you have questions, especially since it's been a couple of years since that particular conference. And then the last one was more of a comment, wondering if local Blue Cross Blue Shield North Dakota plans will ever recognize licensed nutritionists for credentialing, as it was just said that the LN and LRD are equivalent from the board's perspective.
That is not up to us. I am not sure. I know there are a lot of insurances out there that accept LN as an equivalent for insurance-based purposes, but I am not sure where North Dakota stands or why. So I would contact the insurance company directly. Okay. Are there any other questions? Okay. Well, if there's no other questions, I think we will go ahead and end the presentation here. I just want to thank everyone for attending. It is our intention. This was recorded, so it is our intention to get it uploaded to our website so it can be reviewed at any time so that it's available. If you do have any questions, again, beyond this, I put my contact information on that last slide. You can also contact me through our website at any time. But again, thank you for joining us. Thank you for your questions and participating, and have a great day.